that's cool. That is Super Chick. Super Chick in the house.
Yep.
That's a song called Hey Hey. So check that out. Check out that whole album, actually, if you want to.
It's all good. It is a good song.
Rock What You Got is the name of the album.
That was a rock and or roll band.
It is. Christian band, though. So that's
fine.
They're cool.
Yeah.
All right. It's all good. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to Blind Squirrel Radio. I'm your host, Brad, and here is the world's greatest animal trainer, Kidge.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome. And our own personal tour guide, Robert. From Robert? Did we lose Robert?
Are you serious?
Oh.
Episode 2.
Robert's already gone. He said he was going to be in his trailer. I guess he did. He left.
I'm here.
Okay.
There he is.
I even did a whole keep your hands and feet in the vehicle spiel, and I even did it in Spanish.
Oh, that is so sad.
I mean, it wasn't correct because I don't know Spanish.
Well, yeah.
But I used the word taco and enchilito, so that.
Robert is having microphone cable problems, so we're going to be emailing
that,
him.
That was an internet issue.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah, Skype just Skyped out on me.
Just didn't like you all of a sudden.
No.
Okay.
It's always me.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Well, last week, just to review a little bit, last week we kind of went over what Blind Squirrel Radio is all about and what we call internal apologetics, where we said this is having an answer to the questions that society, that our modern culture poses to the Christian faith. And so we started off with building our, what we call our Christian moral ethic, with a foundation. And we said that foundation is clearly stated in the Bible to be Jesus Christ, that no other foundation can be laid. And this week, we're going to talk about cornerstones. Now, cornerstones aren't something that is in our modern culture. I mean, we don't normally know what it, I don't even, I don't, well, let me please speak personally. I don't know what a cornerstone is. I mean, I know it probably be in the corner of the building, right? Because it's named corner.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's not as far as my knowledge extends. But
it's where you take all of your other measurements from.
Right. It's okay. Sorry. Good. No, excellent. That's exactly what I didn't know. What I was going to say is what I do know is that you have to have it to build the rest of the building, but I don't know why. So there you go.
Okay.
Robert's filled us in. See, tour guide. Told you.
Yay.
So cornerstones are very important, very important. And what I've called them is the first principles. And so, Robert, if you've got Mark 12, 30 and 31.
Yep. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these.
So they were, I should have backed up there. But Jesus was asked specifically, what is the greatest commandment? You know, what is the, and that the word greatest there, that Greek word there for greatest means sort of most important or a first commandment. And that's why Jesus answered, you know, in another place, he says, all the law and prophets rest on these two principles. So everything in the Bible that Jesus, you know, because we think about the Bible being a big list of do's and don'ts. In fact, I think most people think of it a big list of don'ts, right? But all the law, everything in the Bible, all the principles in the Bible that tell you how to live or what to do and all that rest on these two things. That's pretty simple, right? I mean, if you can boil everything down to two commandments, then I can understand that. I can hold that in my head, right?
Yeah, right.
Mm. And so the two commandments are, again, love God. And love each other, right?
Yes.
So love God, but it's not just love God. It's love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. That's, can anybody do that?
I don't think so.
No, I mean, I don't think anybody can do that completely all the time.
Right.
You know, I can't focus on anything for more than 5 minutes anyway, so it's going to be tough for me. But if I could do that, right? And then he says, and the other one is like it, which is love each other as yourself, love your neighbor as yourself. And so if we could do those two things, then we could fulfill the entire the rest of the Bible. We wouldn't need to have it. But what he does is, because he knows that we can't do that, the rest of the Bible is sort of filling these two things out. In other words, it's saying how you do these things. So you accomplish, and we'll go into that next week when we start to build on these two principles with the Ten Commandments, because five of them relate to one principle and the other five relate to the other principle. And so we'll explore that as how those the commandments in the Bible and the rules of the Bible, so to speak, support these two things. But what we can do, and what's important, is that if you ever get confused about, supposedly there's one guy who memorized the entire Bible, but for most of us, we can't hold the entire Bible in our head. And so, you encounter something in life and you say, well, I can remember a passage in the Bible that kind of leads me to believe I should do this. But I also remember another passage in the Bible that kind of sounds like it would say, do the opposite. I don't know which way to go. Should I buy the business or not? Well, one verse says, save your money and don't throw pearls after swine. And the other verse says, invest and don't bury your money in the ground. So, yeah. What do I do? I don't know what to do. You can go back. The way the Bible is structured is you can always drill down. Each principle rests on another principle until you get all the way down to these two things. And these two things rest on Jesus. So, whenever we get confused, we can always go back down the chain until we get to how does this fulfill these other principles? If two principles seem to be leading me in two different directions, I can go back, because eventually they all jive with each other. They all lead us towards a relationship with the Lord. So let's talk about, so the first one we've talked about a little bit, with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind, with all our strength, that kind of covers all that we are, right? It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
There's nothing. So the other one, though, is interesting because it says love your neighbor as yourself. And so that sounds like, well, I only have to love my neighbor. Well, and this was asked by the disciples. So who's our neighbor? it's like, I got some people I don't particularly want to love, and they're not really, they don't live next to me. So.
See, that's the thing. Whenever you start asking hair-splitting questions, it means you're trying to get out of something.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, don't you think that, like, especially as a kid, they say, okay, now I want you to stay close where I can see you. Well, can you see me if I'm around the corner?
Right.
It's all of a sudden. Where are the boundaries? What, how far do I have to go?
Let me know. I want to know exactly how far I can go.
And that's just the wrong attitude.
It is. And Jesus was asked this question specifically. Who is my neighbor then? I mean, the disciples did the same thing that our 2-year-olds do. Okay. Well, you said don't do it, but who's my neighbor? And he go ahead, kid. Sorry.
It was actually a lawyer.
A lawyer asked this question.
Oh, you're right.
You're right. It wasn't a disciple. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. So there has to be a loophole.
Let's nail this thing down here. Okay. But Jesus turned the question on his head, right? This is in Luke 10:29 through 36.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. 29. Okay. But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead." What is half dead? Okay. Now, by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, who was also a priest, isn't he?
Yes, they're the priest class, yes.
Okay, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii, and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, "Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back." Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?
So Jesus turns the question around on him. Instead of saying, the guy's saying, okay, well, who do I really have to be nice to? Who is these neighbors that you want me to love? Jesus turns it around and says, who was being the neighbor in this story? You know, this is an everyday life thing. Here's a situation where these three people didn't know this guy, but who was the neighbor? And he's saying, so not only is he saying, love your neighbor, he's saying, be a good neighbor, right? And he didn't even work for State Farm at all.
That's right.
I know him. So.
Just to throw this out there, because I like these little facts, I think it's pronounced a denarius, is a day's wage for a laborer. So it's 2 days' wage is what he left with the innkeeper.
Wow, that's a lot of money. That's significant.
The a Samaritan was pretty much like an enemy.
Yeah, they were a race of people that was not favored at the time.
Right. So it would be like if a Palestinian stopped and helped a Jew.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, modern day.
Good example.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So there's another part to that, though. So let's go back to the original statement. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, in modern times these days, loving yourself, I know a lot of people that don't really love themselves very much.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like themselves very much. They go to therapy to work these issues out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, well, what if I don't love myself very much? If I have to love my neighbor as myself, I'm not going to be treating him very nice because I don't treat myself very good.
Right.
And Jesus took care of this problem too. Let's look at John 15:12.
Okay. Keith, do you have that? Or
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you.
Ooh, so Jesus says, just so, and then in another place he calls this, I think it's in Matthew, he calls it a new commandment. I give you a new commandment. And so he's saying, look, guys, there's no way out of this. I'm going to be the example of how you're supposed to love. You should love yourself this way, and you should love each other this way. And if we say that, if Jesus is saying love like I love, then we got to ask ourselves the question, how did Jesus love?
That's a good question.
So how did he love? So like in John 15:13, he goes on to kind of explain, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. In fact, he says, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends.
So this is all in context. Jesus is going right, this is the next verse.
Uh-huh.
And he's saying, this is the greatest love, to lay down your life for your friend. And did Jesus do that?
Yeah.
Right. So he laid down his life even for strangers, for enemies, for people who hate him.
That's true.
He died and laid down his life. So, and then also to love completely. What was the next verse say in 14?
14 says, you are my friends if you do whatever I command you.
So he's saying, So in 13, he says, no greater love is than to lay down your life for your friends. And in 15, says, if you'll do what I say, you'll be my friends. So linking.
That's a go ahead. Really powerful thing there, because normally, you know, in history, you know, a king says, you will do what I say or I will kill you. You know, like in sci-fi movies, like the aliens come here and they say, you know, you will have to do whatever I command you to do. And then it's like all this evil stuff. Well, what Jesus is saying is you have to do what I tell you to do or you're not my friend. But the thing that I want you to do is to love.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you do that.
That is what the command is.
And not if you do what I say or I'll kill you. No, do what I say and I'll die for you.
Right. Yeah. Right. I'll allow myself to be killed.
It's so awesome. Jesus always turns things around and looks at them from the other side and shows us the error of our fleshly thinking. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus loved sacrificially because he did lay down his life for his friends. He loved completely because he gave everything he had. And yet at the end he said, it is finished. I've done it. I've taught you, you know, I've even arranged for the Holy Spirit to come and be with you. I've done it all. And so he loves sacrificially, he loves completely, and he loves unconditionally. If we go to Ephesians 1:4-5, I don't even remember what that says because I didn't write down what it says. I just wrote down the verse. Does anybody have that yet?
It says, even as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and blameless before him. In love, he predestined us for adoption as sons through Jesus Christ, according to the purpose of his will.
Right. And we don't want to get off on a big predestination discussion, but all we know is from this verse, what we can know from this verse for sure, is that he loved us while we were still sinners. He loved us while we hated him. He loved us before we did anything to deserve it. That's what it means unconditionally. Right? Mm-hmm. So we still have the option to reject God, and we still can reject God. So it's not unconditionally in the sense that we can't reject him, because we do. But it's how he loves us. So
nice. So here, let me ask this question.
Sure.
Now that we know how we are supposed to love our neighbors, and we know that we're supposed to love God with everything we have, how does that all wrap into our moral ethic?
Well, this is we're still working on the foundation for our moral ethic. So this is our mortar. This is what sticks everything together, because you've got the two principles that say love God and love your neighbors. And here he is defining what that love is. So this is the mortar that goes in between these two stones that's going to make up our building. It's going to make up our Christian moral ethic. And so you've got the two principles that everything else is going to be built on. Everything else is going to rest on these two first principles, these two stones. And then you've got the mortar, which won't let you slip away from these two stones, won't let you find it. Well, love, hey, you know, I don't know if I really understand what the word love means. But, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, I love pizza, right? So, but no, Jesus says, this is the kind of love I'm talking about. There's no way to slip out of this, because Jesus goes ahead and he shows you how to love. He shows you what he's talking about by loving the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. He tells you, he explains how you're supposed to love your neighbor. He explains who your neighbor is. He clues everything together so that this building we're going to build, this Christian moral ethic, won't fall. It's not going to fall. And if you get confused, you can always go back to these core principles. And that's cool. How it fits into our moral ethic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Awesome. And that's
I guess you could really sum up those, you know, those two commands as have a relationship with God and have a relationship with everyone else.
I have good relationships.
Have a loving relationship.
Yeah. Well, yes, yeah. Yes,
yes.
Yeah. I guess invest in them. Don't right. Just, you know.
I've got a relationship with my cousin Harry. That's not the kind of relationship he's talking about. I don't like Harry.
Oh, wow.
But I love him, right? No, I'm supposed to. Okay, I got to work on that. I got to work on that. All right. Well, that's as far as I want to go tonight, because I just want to break off little chunks and get them so we don't get confused and get them solidly placed. So all these verses will be in the show notes if you want to look them up or see what we've talked about. And enjoy that. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Now, I was going to say this. This is just I don't know why I wrote this down, but I wrote this down because in my class, when I do my class, I give little challenges every week to everybody that's in there. And so I thought maybe I'll try to include that. I don't know if it's going to work out, but I think it's a good idea if we start here with this challenge, and that is to read your Bible every day and just kind of take a verse, it didn't have to be a whole verse. It can just be because the verses, God didn't write the verses, right? He didn't break everything up into verses when he wrote the Bible.
Right.
But read something in the Bible and just take it and start reading it until something sticks, until something's like, what is that about? And then I'm not telling you to memorize big giant chunks of the Bible, but read the Bible every day and find something, especially do it in the morning. And find something that sticks and think about that. Meditate on that the rest of the day. Ask the Lord to explain it to you, because he promises he will. And if you'll do that, you'll get in the habit of doing that. You'll find that you'll grow in wisdom all every day. He'll just work in that in you, and you'll come a long way. So that's my little challenge. What do you think?
I like it.
Okay.
Robert, sure.
Yeah. Good. I've got one right now that I've been working that's bugging me. And in Mark, there's a story about Jesus getting in a boat. He gets the disciples in the boat. I'll just share this with you because I want to. So there you go.
Yeah.
So Jesus gets in his boat, right? He tells the disciples, get in the boat. We're going to go to the other side of the sea. I don't know if a sea is a sea, a big lake, or is it a small ocean? I can't decide. Anyway, he says get in a boat. So they get in the boat and they're going across, and it comes up a big storm, right? And the disciples turn around, and it says Jesus was in the back, it was in the stern of the boat, asleep on a pillow. Okay. And then it goes on. Okay. The story goes on. It's very interesting because he wakes up and he rebukes the storm, you know, and the disciples all are amazed. And he says, oh, you have little faith. And I understand all that. Okay. I mean, well, maybe I don't completely understand it, but I get it. I mean, that part's really. But what bugs me is the pillow.
Like, why did he mention the pillow?
Why a pillow? It's the only time in the Bible that the word pillow, that word for pillow is used. The only time in the Bible the word pillow is translated into English, and really? the Greek word is never used again anywhere else. And so I'm like, why on earth is there a pillow in this boat? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, what's funny is every time, you know, that they sat at a table, they were leaning on pillows,
but they never mentioned it.
I know. So why mention it here? Well, maybe it means like a bed. Or there's, you know, there's some significance to that specific thing.
I looked it up. It said it was the Greek word for cushion or pillow.
Maybe what it's trying to say is that maybe there was some sort of dinner table on this boat and he was resting on one of the pillows that they leaned on.
But he was asleep. Okay. All right.
I wonder what kind of sandwich he ate that day.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Well, anyway, that's what I've been meditating on and asking the Lord to explain to me. He's like, why the pillow, Lord? Why mention the pillow?
That's the answer that you want from God.
Well, it bugs me. And that's, you know. All right. So, hey, listen, did y'all watch the Olympics?
Not really.
Oh, that's because you don't have a television. I mean, you don't have TV service.
Right. And you could not watch the Olympics unless you had a TV service.
It was weird, right? They broadcast it online, but you had to have a television service to watch the online broadcast. Is that not the dumbest?
Yeah. It's like, NBC is still like 15 years in the past.
I mean, why can't you buy you should have been able to buy an Olympic pass. It's like, okay, I don't have television, but I'll pay $50 to watch, you know, 30 hours of the Olympics.
Exactly.
Or right.
I mean, yeah. I'm sure people would have done it. I don't know if you'd have done it, but I'm sure people would have done it.
I watched as much as I possibly could have.
I did too. Oh, I did too. I'm an Olympic junkie. So I'm glad it's not just, I'm glad I'm not alone, Robert. Because I work from home and I have a TV in my office. So I would turn the sound down and I would have it on the Olympics the whole day.
So you just watch water polo the time?
I watch water polo, basketball, volleyball. Wrestling. I was watching wrestling, and I thought I was watching two guys wrestle. And then it changed. Like it was the next bout, and it was one of them had a ponytail, and I was like, "That's weird. Why does he have a ponytail?" And then I looked in the corner of the screen. And it was women's wrestling, but you couldn't tell.
They were handsome.
They didn't have makeup on or anything. So yeah, no, but what about that long jump? Okay, that was like one of the last weekend.
Okay.
The last weekend they did the long jump. Did you watch that, Robert?
I saw like the qualifying stuff. I don't think I saw it on the last day.
You didn't see the gold medal, the medal round or whatever.
No.
It was amazing. I mean, I don't think it was real. It couldn't be real. They were jumping. It was like 18, 22. I think the one in one jumped like 22 and a half feet or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
It was that's as long as that's longer than my truck. I mean, this thing is such huge.
That's like a cat would jump that.
You'd have to throw the cat.
Hey, that's an event.
Cat throwing, right.
How do I lobby for that?
I walked this out. I actually did. I went in my backyard. I took a tape measure, right? And my tape measure is only a 25-foot tape measure, so it was almost gone. I marked that out in my backyard, right? And this is what I determined. I determined that if it was over a gorge, okay, of flaming hot lava, and I was being chased by rabid wildebeests, and my pants were on fire, I would still die in the lava. Because I ran and jumped. I made it about 8.5 feet. You know?
Oh, wow.
I'm not in shape, but That's a long way short of the 22 feet they jumped.
8.5 feet. So if you doubled,
my jump, I would still die. You would be
last place.
Yeah. I wouldn't qualify for the Olympics at all. You know, Robert, basically me and you threw Kidge. Then we might qualify for the Olympics.
That's right.
Kids throwing. Look for it.
Maybe not.
2014.
Everybody, you know, and everyone at home, what's a kid? Is that some sort of animal in Africa?
That's awesome. But no, last night, my wife and I started watching the opening ceremonies because we had missed the countries walking in. And it was towards the end of the Olympics that I figured out a way to be able to watch the Olympics for free without doing some sort of pirate stream or anything like that.
Okay.
Okay. How'd you do that?
I tricked the BBC website into thinking I was in England.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I guess that's not
pronounced aluminum. How did you do it?
He put a U in color, and
I had to put some petrol into my auto.
And, while you were on holiday,
so they were reshowing the opening ceremonies.
No, they have every minute of the Olympics on the BBC website.
Oh, cool! Did not know that.
I'm gonna go watch.
Yeah.
Well, they leave it
because there were events I didn't get to see, like judo.
Right. Uh-huh.
Right, yeah.
Fencing, not that I care, but I didn't get to see it.
I saw some of it when I was working from home. Working in quotes.
Oh, yeah, right. They had it on at the office, and every time I turn around, it was water polo on.
Yeah, yeah, they showed that a lot.
Yeah, so I got sick of that pretty quick.
Cool. Well, anyway, now you can watch the stuff. So you watch the opening ceremonies?
We started watching. We got an hour and a half way of the 4-hour opening ceremonies. We got to the beginning of the countries walking in, and we were like,
that goes on forever, by the way. That went on for 2 hours, just the countries walking in.
That's never quick. What did you think of the opening ceremonies, like the whole show part?
Yeah.
The celebration of socialized medicine was interesting.
Yeah.
Well, socialized dance. Pretty proud of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. No, but I thought the Kenneth Bramhall quoting Shakespeare was really neat.
Uh-huh.
And
that's all he does, though. He doesn't do anything other than quote Shakespeare.
Well, that's true. That's pretty much – he's made a career on it, but he's good at it. Did you get to the end with Paul McCartney yet?
We had tuned in to the Olympics when they were live on NBC's website at some point, but we saw the Paul McCartney thing.
That was cool. That was neat.
We were so bored by that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm a big fan of oldies and music from that era.
Uh huh.
But that Hey Jude is just a beating. Just what? Regardless.
Of no, what it's a terrible song.
First just, of all,
that goes on for like 20 minutes,
and there's no words.
Yeah.
But that was the point. These people didn't all speak English. This was every nation around the world who knew this. Even if you don't know it, you learn it in about, 10 seconds? Yeah, right. It takes 10 seconds to learn.
Those countries could probably sing along with the latest Bieber song. So
that's right.
My favorite part had to be when Mr. Bean.
Yes. That was excellent. Was awesome. That was so great. That the Chariots awesome. Of Fire. That was so cool.
I love him.
Oh, see, now I have – but see, I have an Olympic withdrawal. It's good to know that there's some out there I can go check out now on the BBC site.
You only have to wait until the next presidential election season.
No.
No, it's in 2 years.
Winter is –
I meant for the Summer Olympics.
Yes.
I think I actually prefer the Winter Olympics.
What? Really?
Yeah.
There's not as many sports.
Well, I'm not – sure. Well, you know, it's all the same drama. You know, it's all the same everything, but with snow. There's snow.
Hey, well, you do live in Nevada, so
I want snow volleyball.
Snow volleyball. That would be cool. Let's do that.
That would be cool.
Yeah. No, but there's not as much team. There's only hockey. I mean, there's hockey, and that's it as far as team sports, right?
That's fine. Yeah.
And curling, but does that count?
But you've got, like, all of the like speed skiing.
I call it. Yeah, I like the races. Stuff. Yeah, I do like the races, the speed skating and the skating skating and the. Do they still do the jumping where they jump the barrels? They still do that.
What?
I don't remember that in the last Olympics.
Are you talking about the one where they, like, they slide down and then they do all the flips in the air and it's like five stories high?
No.
No.
No, there's one where they they're on ice and they jump. Oh. It's like the long jump, but on ice.
Wow, that sounds painful.
I remember it, but it seems like I don't remember it from the last Olympics. It was like I remember it from before that. But yeah, it does look painful. No, but I do like the speed skating and the races and the downhill races. But see, a lot of the downhill stuff is against the clock. You know, they're like this bobsled. And what's the other one without the sled? It's just Bob. What's that one called?
Luge.
The luge, yeah. It's like, I don't get it. Yeah, I don't get it's that like
you're
one.
You're riding on a single ice skate sort of thing.
That's exactly.
Exactly. And I don't understand it because it looks like you could do it with – it doesn't look there's any – skill involved. It's just like they chunked a guy down a hill in a tube. Right. Right?
Yeah, but he's got to keep his head up, and so like that neck muscle right there. Yeah. That's got to be huge.
Oh, look, he pointed his toes. What an awesome athlete! There. I want to see the involuntary luge where they just take somebody out of the audience. Oh man,
somebody's been listening to Seinfeld.
Yeah, that's a Seinfeld joke. Sorry.
I love the speed skating. Like with, what's his name, Apollo?
Yes, Creed. Apollo Creed, yeah.
I have never been more, you know, anxiety-ridden than when watching that particular sport. It's so quick, and it's like, he fell.
Yeah, it's
like, dang you, North Korea. Yeah. It's always North Korea.
Stay in your lane, man. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's cool. All right, well,
I have to start, you know, brushing up on all the winter stuff. I have to start, you know, what's the difference between regular and goofy foot? And I just start, you know, because we all become experts when we watch the Olympics.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. You got to know the difference between a triple sow cow and a whatever the other thing is.
Exactly. You know, for like, you know, 4 years, you don't watch that sport.
And think then, about it. No.
You know, and then like 2 weeks out of 4 years, you're like, well, you know, she actually did much better in the worlds.
Yeah, the world championship. Okay, well, where is that televised? Because I could have watched the world championship, whatever. But yeah, it's like
ESPN 37.
Yeah, right.
Oh, fun. All right. Well, I would like to talk about, before we go, I'd like to do a little review of a book I've been reading. It's called Not a Fan. And it's by Kyle Eidelman. Now, I actually got the teen version of this book. It's actually called the Teen Edition because I can understand this one. I flipped through the regular one and it wasn't as well organized. Let me put it that way. But this one's very, it's very good. The theme of the book is basically broke down, or that's not the theme of the book, but the structure of the book is broke down into three sections. And the first one is, are you a fan or a follower? And it asks basically, one, two, three, four, five questions. Did you make a decision to follow Jesus, or did you make a commitment to follow Jesus? Is your knowledge about, do you have knowledge about him or intimacy with him? And it defines what a fan is, like an enthusiastic admirer. That's what a fan is. But it's saying Jesus didn't want fans. He wanted followers, people who did what he said, not just enthusiastically admired him for what he did. So, it asks, are you following Jesus or following the rules? It goes into that kind of legalism thing. One of many, or you're one and only. So in other words, is he one of many people you admire, or is he the only one that you look to to guide your life? And are you self-empowered or spirit-filled? Are you looking to improve yourself? Is that why you want Christianity? To improve your life, to improve yourself, to be a better person? Or are you spirit-filled and looking to glorify God? And so it really, you know, it takes it on a very well-organized sort of I like the simplicity of it, but yet it deals with very deep things. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, the attraction of this book. The second part, that was the first part, are you a fan or a follower? The second part is an invitation to follow, and it kind of goes into what that means. And that's about four chapters. And then the last section of the book is, okay, you've made this decision. Now, what does it mean? How do you walk this out? How do you walk by the Spirit? And it says, and that's based, and he says, what, wherever, whenever, and whatever. And those are three different chapters. And he goes kind of through examining every aspect of your life and how you can be a follower of Jesus and not just a fan. So it's a good book, and there's lots of good stuff in there. And I'm going to be using it next year with my teens to sort of challenge them to take the next step in their spiritual life. But I wanted to kind of recommend it. It's worth the read.
Huh, very good.
Next week, Robert is going to give us a review of a movie, but don't tell us what it's going to be. Keep us in suspense.
Okay, good, because I don't have one right now.
Well, you didn't have to say that. See, I was giving you an out. All right, and kids are going to find something to talk about, too.
Something.
He doesn't let it be Star Wars. Please let it be Star Wars.
He doesn't watch movies. He doesn't read books. I don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't listen to music. I don't know. What? No, it's cool. So this was fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us. And like I said, tune in next week. We'll talk about, we'll start building on that moral ethic. We'll actually go into what gets built on those cornerstones, and that'll be fun. All right. Vias con Dios, everybody.
Vias con Dios.
There it goes.